What you missed on The Breakfast Huddle with Elliot Danker, Yasmin Yonkers, and Ryan Huang. Only on Money FM 89.3.
Our next guest is Lauren Sorkin, Managing Director of Asia Pacific for 100 Resilient Cities of the Rockefeller Foundation. If you're wondering about 100 Resilient Cities, it's pioneered by this foundation, dedicated to helping cities around the world become more resilient to the physical, social and economic challenges that are a growing part of the 21st century. Lauren, who's here, is an environment and knowledge management specialist. She spent 6 years working with the Asian Development Bank, promoting climate-responsive development in the Asia-Pacific region. At 7:37, we say good morning, Lauren. How are you today?
Good morning, Yasmin and Elliot. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Now, the main aim of your program, 100 Resilient Cities, is to help cities around the world become more resilient. We mentioned that. What are some of the main challenges that we face today?
So cities around the world are increasingly exposed both to shocks, so major disasters like earthquakes, hurricanes, even terrorist attacks and health outbreaks. They're also buckling under increasing pressure and stresses placed on cities like lack of affordable housing, social inequality, and also lack of access to jobs, education and health care.
And this list of 100 resilient cities, Singapore is a member state amongst other nations. A lot of people associate Singapore as a fairly resilient state in Southeast Asia. No natural disasters, traditional challenges that other cities associate with. What are some of the challenges that Singapore faces in terms of sustainability and climate change?
Singapore is, as you mentioned, a very resilient place, city and state, but it has its own unique challenges. In terms of climate change, it is a low-lying country here in Southeast Asia. A lot of the population, well, basically all of us, are living in coastal areas, which are very vulnerable to sea level rise and also increasing temperatures. I mean, we feel the heat here in Singapore and have, as a stress, an aging population. And that combination of climate change and aging population is something that Singapore is paying attention to.
So in the case of Singapore, what would 100 resilient cities be involved with to, say, aid the situation?
So we've been working very closely with the Center for Livable Cities on something that we are calling the Singapore Resilience Narrative, and that will be released during the World Cities Summit. That takes some of the plans, whether that's the national climate change planning process, as well as other work that's coming out of MND, and looks at how we can design initiatives with Singapore that address these multiple challenges together, whether that's getting communities involved in flash flooding and limiting that, addressing those issues together, looking at how we can help people age in place with a changing climate. Those are the kinds of initiatives that we're working very closely here with our colleagues in Singapore on.
I've heard about the whole aging conversation, but in terms of getting ourselves ready for flash floods and stuff, that conversation doesn't happen very often, does it, Elliot?
Well, you know, they once fixed the flooding problem on Orchard Road and thought it's over, right? But, you know, it's a very real problem.
It should continue,
Actually, we're talking about climate change. Another thing that is happening around the region, the Asia-Pacific region, is, you know, moving towards this whole notion of going towards a smart nation. But in our push towards being a smart nation, especially in Singapore, what should we not forget to pay attention to?
It's really been exciting to watch as Singapore has taken this role as chair of ASEAN and launched the Smart Cities program. And I think there's a lot that other cities across the region can learn from Singapore. At the same time, as Singapore is doing this work, we can't institute technology for technology's sake. We have to really look at how we can use technology to address these other issues. So we were just talking about aging in place. There are incredible innovations that are available, not just here in Singapore, but also across the region. We work really closely with a city in Japan called Toyama. And what Toyama has done is actually used telemedicine to help its aging population to monitor their health without having to leave their home. So they have physicians who, via iPad, can check most of the vitals of their patients. They limit the exposure of these aging populations to hospitals and the bacteria and the bugs that we all know are present there, while still being able to deliver quality health care to those people. So there are technology solutions that we can integrate with our health care to really do a better job. In terms of climate change, we can see how transport can continue to be part of the smart solution, whether that's traffic regulation. You were just talking about Elon Musk in your news report. So moving towards electric and autonomous vehicles is a really important step. In Singapore, we have a small population and the ability to really upscale how we use public transport and limit car use.
All right, Lauren Sorkin there, Managing Director of Asia Pacific for 100 Resilient Cities of the Rockefeller Foundation. What are some of the opportunities and challenges of a smart nation? Pertinent, of course, this year with Singapore chairing ASEAN.
So as we were just talking about, using technology to deliver multiple benefits is important, and making sure that you deploy Smart Nation technologies in an inclusive way. So one of the things that's very exciting is how we've seen Wi-Fi expand across Singapore so that you don't have to have an expensive plan to have access to all of the information and knowledge on the internet. And that sort of democratization of education on smart technologies is very exciting.
Okay, so health, transport, and connectivity.
Absolutely. Expansion of Wi-Fi, explosion of Wi-Fi, I should say. You know, when it comes to talking about the haves and the have-nots, there's always this divide between north and south, isn't there, Lauren? What would you say are the key differences between countries from Asia in the north and the south, according to what you have in your 100 Resilient Cities work?
One of the things that we find, of course, is the difference in population and demographics across North and South Asia. We have exploding populations in many areas, not just of South, but Southeast Asia as well. And when you look at the working population numbers, those are drastically different when you look at places like Japan and when you look at places like Indonesia. But we also see that as much as our cities think that they're different, they're also the same. All of our cities are struggling with water challenges.
Okay.
Too much, too little. Singapore has obviously been thinking deeply about this for a long time, given the water shortages and the relationship with Malaysia. But many of our other cities are also looking at real-time water shortages. In Chennai, we've seen drastic floods in 2015, and then water shortages less than a year and a half later. So our cities are all struggling with how to best manage water efficiently and also deal with their waste in responsible ways.
Ah, the waste, especially plastic, right? Yesterday we were talking about how if you lay out plastic, it's a lot. It actually covers what? Larger than India, was it that I mentioned?
That's right. It was really stark, yeah. Anything stood out for you from World Environment Day yesterday, Lauren?
Absolutely. The focus on banning plastics and limiting our consumption is critical.
And
that's something, one of the reasons it's so exciting to work in cities today is not just because we're a majority urban population. I mean, 50% of humans are living in cities. 75% will be living in cities very soon. We're responsible for 75% of global emissions. And a lot of that consumption is happening in cities. City leaders have an opportunity to really change behavior by setting limits in the way people consume plastics.
We were just talking about leaving a carbon footprint or managing waste, rather. Lauren Sorkin, Managing Director of Asia Pacific for 100 Resilient Cities, Rockefeller Foundation. Lauren, the whole waste management thing obviously plays a part in social impact. But how does investing in better urban planning and management add to, you know, creating a lasting social impact apart from waste management?
That's a really important question. So the way we approach problems in the 100 Resilient Cities program is to look at the system. And waste is a classic example of a systemic problem that can be solved by better planning and management. So if we know where waste flows are coming from, the different neighborhoods, how they're producing and then collecting waste, we can manage it much better. If you look at most cities' waste streams, over two-thirds of that is actually organic. If you're separating that waste, you're able to recycle much of it. You're also able to create less landfills and create energy from that. You've seen biogas. I'm sure you've talked about that kind of technology on this program and others. But these are real technologies that exist. Plastics themselves, metals, glass, if we separate them, if we're responsible, and if we understand where our waste flows are coming from in the city, we can manage that collection efficiently. We can lessen traffic by having less lorries on the road, right? We can actually get those materials to the right places, reuse them, and have a financial benefit from that as well.
The smell of the lorry truck going by. Good morning.
Nobody wants to be stuck behind that truck, and better planning gets you better traffic flow.
Better traffic flow. Thank you very much for coming by the studio. Lauren Sorkin, Managing Director of Asia Pacific for 100 Resilient Cities, Rockefeller Foundation.